Welcome back to the Lynx Golf Podcast. This is digital editor Al Lunsford from Lynx, and I'm in Hilton Head, South Carolina, and my co-host today is in Wales, joining me from the back room at a course you might be familiar with, Royal Porthcawl. And his name is Nick Edmond. He's been on the podcast before. It's great to have him back. What's it like where you are, Nick?
What's it like in Wales? It's actually been a wonderful few days. Blue skies, for me, wonderful temperature, around about no more than 70 degrees. A breezy July day, but as I say, a beautiful blue day, blue sky day. And I've been at a fantastic Lynx course, Al, as well today.
I understand that. I would love to talk to you about that. But first things first, I know you live in London, and right now, I would venture to say, and I don't know if this is an over-exaggeration, but this month, this current time, may be one of the biggest sports eras in the history of the country. Can I go that far? You've got Sunday, you've got the Euro final, the first time England's made a final of a major tournament since they won the World Cup over West Germany in 1966. I did check on that, the 66 Open, Nicklaus won at Muirfield. So I was seeing if the cosmos lined up with Royal St. George's, but of course, this coming week you have the Open Championship making its return after a year off at Royal St. George's in there in Sandwich, and you've got the Wimbledon tennis tournament going on right now as well. So am I too far off saying that this is one of the biggest sports months ever?
Well, I guess we have Wimbledon and the British Open or the Open Championship, that they're always in July, and of course they do get global audiences. But you're right, the fact that England is in the Euro final for the very first time, the country feels, all the talk is about sport at the moment. That's true, and if you're a golfer, of course the Scottish Open is happening as we speak, and I believe I just checked and John Ram was leading. So it's football, tennis, golf, it's all happening here in England, and Wales. I better say that because I'm in Wales.
So it's fair to say that part of the world in terms of sport is just buzzing right now. And I understand you went to one of the semifinals and not the beloved England final, but you attended the Italy-Spain match at Wembley. What was that experience like for you?
Well, it was a thrilling game. To be with 60,000 people that's obviously wonderful given what the world's been experiencing recently. But no, I mean, football and golf have always been my favourite sports, and to be at Wembley, pity, of course, I couldn't somehow beg, steal or borrow some England tickets, but to see Italy, Spain, and as you know, it was a wonderful game. And England are going to be playing the winners on Sunday afternoon your time.
I will be tuning in, and I can't imagine what that must be like to attend an event like that. I'd probably compare it to like a NFL playoff game is in my head what I'm thinking, but maybe even more so passion, because you've got the element of supporting your country, and in terms of England, the game being in your country and having so much importance historically. So, all eyes will be on England on Sunday. And then all eyes will continue to be on England, as I mentioned, and as we go to Royal St. George's. What is your familiarity with the Open venue that will be on display next week at Sandwich?
Well, I've attended, I've attended three Opens at Royal St. George's, the most memorable to me of which, without doubt, would be the 1993 Open, which Greg Norman, I believe, shot 64 on the final day and finished ahead of Nick Faldo and Bernard Langer by two shots. And it was an incredible leaderboard. And obviously when a person shoots, well, in Nick Faldo's case, shoots a pretty much faultless 67, having led, but gets beaten by a great player who shoots probably the round of his life. So the quality of the field, the golf course was in, as it will be for sure next week, in fantastic condition. And I think, without meaning to offend the Birkdales, Lithams, Birkdale, Litham and Hoylake, of course, all staged the Open Championship in England. St George's is probably my personal favourite. I'm not saying it's necessarily the best. That's a subjective thing. They're all four of them are great, great golf courses. I personally love Royal St George's. If you're a lover of real traditional, I suppose some might say old-fashioned links golf, but if you like the occasional blind shot, the awkward stances, all the classic traditional links elements, Royal St George's has those in spades. So I think it'll be a very atmospheric championship, and definitely one of my favourite venues among all nine Open Championship venues.
A noble return for the Open, it seems. How many Opens have you been to in your life, and do you remember the first?
Oh, I certainly remember the first. I'm 60 now, Al, and my first was, dare I say it, 45 years ago in 1976 when I was 15, and I went to the 1976 Open at Royal Birkdale, and that is famous for the fact that that's where a certain 19-year-old called Severiano Ballesteros, who became mine and pretty much every British and European golfer's hero, emerged from literally nowhere. Nobody could pronounce his name, never mind know much about his background. But he very nearly won it. He was leading going into the final day by a couple of shots. Johnny Miller produced a final round 66 to win comfortably in the end. But Seve kind of won the hearts. If Johnny Miller won the Open, Johnny Miller won the hearts of the watching public, and that event catapulted him onto a world stage. So that was my first Open. But I mean, that was a golden era. I mean, you always, I guess when you look back, golden era is when you first fall in love with the game, generally, whatever age you are. The golden era is the era when you fell in love with golf. And so, but I think about the mid-70s, I mean, that 76 Open at Birkdale, as I say, Johnny Miller in his absolute prime, the emergence of Sergio Ballesteros, Nicholas was challenging. But then the following year came the incredible Nicholas Watson duel in the sun at Turnberry, when they, I mean, what was special about that was the fact that, I mean, there've been more than one titanic duel in the Open. I mean, much more recently, of course, Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson had that incredible finish battle on the final day. But the fact that Nicholas and Watson were the two top golfers in the world at that time, and they finished 10 ahead of the rest of the field. And I think on the final two, they played together. I think they actually played the last three rounds together, but they both opened 70-68. And if I remember, Nicholas shot 65-66, but somehow lost because Watson shot a pair of 65. So amazing golf. And then the following year after that, Jack Nicklaus, of course, won the Open at St Andrews. And you could carry on. 1979 was Seve's first triumph. So it was a bit of a golden era. And I've been fortunate to attend, it's certainly more than a dozen. I don't know. It might be something like 15 Open Championships. And I was trying to think, have I watched an Open at every venue? Well, having been to Portrush, the last Open, which of course was in 2019, I've certainly been to an Open in England, Scotland and Ireland, several different venues. So yeah, maybe it's eight of the nine venues and something like 15 Opens.
That would be an elite club, I would think, among citizens in that part of the world to have been to every single Open venue as an attendee of the Open. Have you played every Open venue? Is that also something you
Oh, for sure. And as I think you know from a previous discussion we've had, Al, I've flown our Global Golf for Cancer flag at every Open Championship venue. And in fact, that includes right. Everyone past and present. So there are 14 Open venues, if you go back to the days of Prestwick and Musselburgh. So I've certainly attended all of those open, every open venue, past, present, and maybe a couple future. Who knows?
Was your first open, do you consider that to be the most memorable of the ones that you've attended, or was there another that sticks out in your head as your favorite memory or favorite year of the Open Championship that you've been to personally?
In a way, it's memorable because it is your first, of course. But 45 years ago is a long time to remember, isn't it?
Sure.
Now, if I had to pick, as I say, I think the best golf would either be in that 77 Open, the Nicholas Watson, or Royal St George's 1993 Open, for the quality of the leaderboard, the quality of the brilliant golf that some of the best players in the world played. But now, if again, you know, we British and Europeans, you know, almost worship Seve, certainly of my generation. Seve was our golfing hero. I mean, I was having a chat today. I'm calling you from Porthcawl in Wales, but I was talking to a group of Welsh golfers, and we got onto the subject of Seve, and I think we all agreed that whatever part of Great Britain or Ireland you come from, if Seve had been going head to head against a British or Irish player, 99% of Brits or Irish would be supporting Seve against their own countrymen. So his victory in the 84 Open at St Andrews, given it was St Andrews, given that iconic celebration when he holed an unlikely birdie putt on the last to defeat Tom Watson, who of course was going for three Opens in a row, that made it special. Again, Seve and Tom Watson were probably the finest golfers in the world in 1984. If you polled most people who were the greatest players at that time, Seve and Tom Watson, and they were such different characters, different personalities, and it only became a duel right at the end of that championship. They weren't playing together. Seve was playing with Watson was playing with Langer. No, Seve was playing with Langer. Let's get it right. Watson was behind him, so Watson was the last group out. But Seve managed to birdie 18 almost exactly at the same time as Watson, not the first among champions to fall at the famous 17th at St Andrews, but he bogeyed the hole as almost at the very minute that Seve holed that iconic putt on the final green. And the roar of the crowd was, you know, I could still hear that roar, and that was 1984. So that was, what is it, 37 years ago? So that's my right. That if I had to pick a favorite Open, I would probably pick that one. Yeah.
Well, of course, we're looking forward to St Andrews next year as well. The return and the 150th Open, right, is there next year?
Yes. No, that's going to be a special Open. But it is. It's at its most famous venue, for sure.
Yeah. Having been to all of them and all 14, as you correctly noted there, do you have a favorite? Would you be willing to give a least favorite in terms of how you personally rank your choices on the all-time Open Rota?
I'd be loath to give a least favorite in case I get in their bad books.
Fair enough.
No, it's not. It's. I don't think there's such a thing. You know, a least favorite Open Championship venue. They're genuinely all great, great golf links. They are quite different from one another. I mean, in atmosphere, in they're all links courses, of course, and that's what separates them. But their histories, many of the links courses, you hardly see the sea. I mean, if you contrast Royal Lytham, very difficult to compare. You know, a golf course like Royal Lytham with somewhere like Turnberry, which, although that's currently off the Open Road, I suppose, but Turnberry, you see so much of the shoreline, whereas Royal Lytham, you kind of feel you're playing in the middle of a city, but you're a mile or so from the sea, and it is absolutely classic links golf. So it's funny. I think, gosh, it's difficult to separate the history of the places as well, and who's won the Open at certain venues. That all adds to perhaps the charm of the venue. From an individual perspective, you remember certain Opens, who won them. But again, you're asking for say favourite venues. Again, I was mentioning how St George's is probably my favourite English venue, because again, I'm not saying it's necessarily better. I'm just simply saying it would be my personal favourite because of the classic unpredictable terrain, I suppose. To me that adds a level of charm, and maybe a level of shot making, in my opinion, because you're not facing a flat lie. You've got to factor in the slopes, the contours of the fairways, as well as the contours of the greens and of course the green surrounds. So there's no such thing as a poor Open Championship venue. That's for certain. They all have different aspects of greatness. How about that? That's a very political answer, isn't it? They all have different aspects.
Very much so. Yes, yes. And I think what you're saying in terms of, you know, how the winners at certain places factor into that, I think that's relevant. I definitely think that makes a lot of sense. And for me personally, the only one I've played is Royal Lytham. And of course, I remember that as well because I was in attendance for Georgia Hall winning the women's Open there, and what a reception she received, and that just made it all the more special. So that place holds, in my mind, a special place.
Yep.
And it's interesting, like you're saying, it's kind of inland now because of the infrastructure that's been built between the course and the sea. It's but what a great venue. You're at a place now in Wales, a country that's never hosted an Open Championship, but if any course deserves it, maybe it's Royal Porthcawl. Where, in terms of courses that maybe should host an Open in the future, what comes to mind? I know you absolutely hold Royal Porthcawl in high regard. Is it that one? And are there any others, do you think, in the future you'd like to see host an Open?
Well, yes, Royal Porthcawl, for a couple of reasons, would be the one that I'd love to see the Open at the most, not just because I'm at Royal Porthcawl this very instant, but because I think the Open should go to Wales. It's been to Northern Ireland, it's been to obviously England and Scotland many, many times. I think it should go to Wales. It's and without question, Royal Porthcawl is the venue that it would go to. And as I say, arguably should go to. It's certainly at the same level as those Open Championship venues. A lot of people love King's Barnes as a new golf course. It would be very surprising if a golf course that's only 20 years old were to stage an Open. It's because of all the traditions, etc., that go with it. But it's certainly, you know, of modern links courses, King's Barnes is a fabulous golf course. It would be wonderful, again, if you're getting on, without getting into political reasons, why Turnberry isn't on the Open rotor. I think we all know why it's not. But it'd be a tragedy if Turnberry never stages another Open, because it's in a lot of people's opinion, our finest links course. Doesn't have the history, of course, of the St Andrews or Muirfield or Royal Liverpool, but it's a gorgeous golf course for one thing, and it's always been a stunningly beautiful links, but it was renovated about 4 or 5 years ago by the same, maybe it's more than that, but by the same team that renovated Royal Port Rush, and everybody raved about how good Royal Port Rush was, and Turnberry is without doubt an even better golf course than it was 10 years ago. And the special holes have been made more special. So that series of holes around the turn are definitely stronger than they were. So I'd love to see the Open one day go back to Turnberry. If you're going to be, this is never going to happen, but if the Open were to go to its great to the greatest links courses in Britain, if it were to go to the greatest links courses in Britain, and okay, let's include Northern Ireland as well, part of the United Kingdom, Royal County Down would be a romantic venue. So would Royal Dornoch. I think those two have a magic about them, and they've certainly more than capable of staging major events in terms of the quality of the test. I mean, Royal County Down is arguably the most challenging links course in the world, and it's staged the Irish Open and the British Seniors. So it's of course the Open Championship is the bigger event, and so. It certainly wouldn't be easy to stage it there. And Royal Dornoch is still seen, regarded as remote, and it's, again, the infrastructure wouldn't be there. But oh, wouldn't it be fun to see the Open at Royal Dornoch or Royal County Down? I'm not sure it'll happen in my lifetime, having said that.
Well, do you know, and I was just looking at the future sites and how far out they plan that. Do you know when that's assessed, like when they could possibly add a course or add or replace a course on the current
rota? I suspect the RNA would say it's constantly under review, but there are nine courses currently on the open rota. So, I mean, if they were sort of obviously had equal shares, as it were, that's only one per decade. What tends to happen is that the Open goes to St Andrews every, for a while it was going every fifth year, so what was it, it was 1990, 1995, 2000. It's I think in every 10 years it's probably going to go to pretty much to an open venue plus St Andrews twice, so that's 10. And it's just, there's so many traditions, as I say, associated with the Open, and the issues surrounding whether it's traffic or how many people could be accommodated in the area, lots of things like that. I don't think we're about to see another open venue, a new open venue come soon, put it that way.
Yeah, right.
We can dream about it.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of, wow, what an absolutely wonderful transition, because I was going to talk to you about your column in our last issue, titled The Stuff of Dreams, Nick. Very Indeed. Well done. And the concept of this piece that you wrote for us was take the nine courses on the open rota and give us two courses nearby to play and almost the shadow of those big well-known venues. So the best nearby links. Mm-hmm. And a fun course to play nearby is how you separated that. That must have been a joy to put together, but maybe I'll start with the two picks you had for Royal St. George's, since that's the issue of the current date and time. So your shadow course was Royal Cinque Ports. Your fun course was Rye. Can you tell me about those two places?
Yes, well, Royal, wonderful name, isn't it? Royal Cinque Ports. Which is only, 5 minutes by car away from Royal St. George's. It's not literally adjacent, but it's very near to Royal St. George's. Did stage the Open twice before the war, so it's always been considered a great venue. It is slightly overshadowed by Royal St. George's, but it's a fantastic test of golf. There's no question about it. It's because it's off the open rota. Of course, it's not as well known as it might be, and it's not a beauty. And again, in the way that Turnberry or Dornoch are, so it doesn't. We're not bombarded by gorgeous images of Royal Cinque Ports, but it's a wonderful test of golf, certainly, and. In particular, the back nine at Royal Cinque Ports is Open Championship quality. Let's put it that way. And as for Rye, well, again, yes. When George, your editor, set me this task of selecting nine courses that might have staged the Open, if you like, had the Open venue it's adjacent to not existed. He has a strange mind, George Cohen. Had they not existed, though, yeah, Royal Cinque Ports is the obvious choice. But I thought, as yes, this is a bit of fun. Why not pick also nine courses that are in the vicinity, but yeah, make them a special because they have a particular character that maybe no other course in the world has. And Rye absolutely fits that bill. Rye is a slightly eccentric golf course. It's I think I said it feels like when you play at Rye, you feel like you're in a golfing time warp because you play the sort of member who plays at Rye will play in plus fours. He will play alternate shots all the time, and somehow these often not young gentlemen, shall we say, they get round the golf course in under 3 hours. Playing this alternate shot, which they've got down to an absolute tee. They're all stood halfway down the fairway while their colleague is teeing off. The golf course is a gem of a golf course. Wouldn't be long enough to stage something like the Open, but it's for, again, for a lover of traditional links golf. If you like Royal St George's, you'd love Rye. It's as simple as that. It's got its blind shots, its wooden sleeper bunkers, it's got some extraordinary contoured greens, and then when you come off the golf course, you're in a museum of a clubhouse. Where, if I remember correctly, the chair that was on the Darwin's Beagle, that the origin of the species, that Charles Darwin, who journeyed to the Galapagos and goodness knows where in the Beagle, and the chair that used to be his captain's chair, as it were, is at Rye. And that sort of typifies its extraordinary oldie world atmosphere. Everything about it, the food, the decor, the ambience, the atmosphere. It's caught in the time warp. So if you ever get the chance to play it at Rye, you're in for your totally an experience like no other.
As you said, you might be spellbound by the time you end your time there. If someone is shifting gears, just back to the Open, if someone is attending the Open for the first time, and maybe it's this year, things are a little bit reduced, I think, still in terms of crowd capacity, but maybe it's in the future. What does someone attending the Open for the first time need to make sure that they do? Are there certain experiences at the Open Championship that are one of a kind that will charm a first-time guest upon going? Maybe it depends on the venue, but anything in particular that you think a first-timer should do at their first Open?
A first-timer who, if the first time has never experienced links golf before as a player or as a spectator, then they are in for something quite different in terms of the atmosphere at an Open Championship. I mean, yes, you've typically got tens and tens of thousands of people all clambering up sand dunes to get better views. You know, you're at one of the four, and in the opinion of anyone in Britain, you're at the greatest tournament in the world, and so there's an electric atmosphere. Maybe bring a stool if you can get one through the gate, though, because you know, as at any major championship, viewing isn't easy these days. So if you can pick your spots, it's whilst it's fun to follow a group, it's very difficult to follow a group of players. So if you can find a spot on where you can watch a number of great players pass through, That's a good way of experiencing it, I think. Finding what is a particularly advantageous position on the links. Bit of research before you go wouldn't be a bad idea.
Very good. Yes, I would think that that's in due order. My last question for you, I know you're on, you mentioned to me that you were on one of your flag flying trips.
Yes.
I would love to know how that's going. What do you have any updates on your travels in terms of flying the number four flag?
Yes, I do. In as much as finally It's been frustrating, of course, Al, for everyone, that not being able to travel. For me, in terms of growing the Global Golf for Cancer campaign, fortunately, we did manage to fly the flag on all six continents. But in developing the campaigns on those continents has been difficult because I've obviously not been able to travel there. But I did have my first overseas flight from Britain in 18 months. I find that hard to believe, but 18 months I managed to escape the UK and I went to Northern Spain, which is, we've been talking about Sevilla earlier in this call. And I was in Northern Spain at Real Pedreña, which was Sevi's home course, meeting with the Sevi Ballesteros Foundation people who we have a close association with. They're on all of our flags, flying around the world. Sevi Ballesteros Foundation, of course, was set up to help in the fight against brain cancer. Our campaign is about fighting all forms of cancer, but obviously it was special to be in Sevi's hometown and stand on the fourth green at Real Pedreña, as I did 10 or 11 days ago, with Sevi's eldest son, Javier, and with his brother, Manuel. Sevi's older brother, Manuel, won't mind me saying, he's now 72, but Manuel played in 10 Open Championships. He was no mean golfer himself. But stand on that green with Sevi's older brother and his older son was a very special moment. I've got lots of plans, Al, to, now that I can escape more often, as the COVID restrictions are gradually being reduced. I guess I'll be going to Europe first because it's now permissible to travel to much of Europe without having to self-isolate. United States, I know it's still difficult for Americans who want to come over and play some of the Great Lakes courses we've been talking about because of the isolation that's still inherent in making trips. But it's likewise, it's the same for us. I desperately want to get to North America, both to Canada and to the United States, to fly our flag and grow the campaign. But it's hopefully it will happen soon. So, and then travel to all the other continents. Again, I'm not sure when I'll get to Australia and New Zealand again, but I absolutely want to do that. So the energy's still there, Al. It's just,
good.
You know, I'll just be patient. That's what I'll be. I'll be patient, just like whoever wins the Open Championship at Royal St. George's next week will need to be very patient.
Always a key, it seems, in the Open. Nick, thank you. Global Golf for Cancer is his organization. I hope that now that you're traveling, I hope you can travel someplace and, you know, hopefully Graylish and Kane and the boys can bring football home, as they say, and all will be right in the world as we head right to Royal St. George's next week.
No, that's right. That would be a great English story, wouldn't it? Royal St. George's stages the Open days after England brings football back home, as we like to say, on Sunday. So, yeah, it's going to be a nervous next 48 hours for me, that's for sure.
Well, best of luck, and hopefully you'll be on the sunny side of things soon. But thank you again for joining
me,
and always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you again, Al and Links Magazine, for inviting me to talk to you again. It's always a pleasure. It's always a treat to write for Links as well. As you know, that's been going back more than about 23 years, I think it is. But anyway, great
Before
to talk
my
to you
time.
Again.
Yes.
Before your time, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
His piece on the Shadow Rota will be on linksmagazine.com as an aside here very soon. So check it out. Thank you again, Nick.
Thank you, Al. My pleasure.